This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, Rob and Mike, for allowing us to speak. My name is Matt Cristiano. I'm with Planetary Pinball, along with Rick Bartlett. And I want to give you kind of an overview of what we're going to talk about today. And if you could, please hold your questions till the end. We're going to talk about sort of a summary of what we've done, who we are, what we did, a little primer on intellectual property, our plans, then we'll break for a little giveaway, and then a question and answer session at the end. So the executive summary of what we did is we acquired the rights, the inventory, and the distribution business of Mr. Pinball Australia, who I'll refer to as Wayne from now on, just for simplicity. And I mean, I think what we really want to say is this is not really any big deal. We are going to be making parts, and that's sort of the end of it. Rick will talk about that a little bit more. As far as who we are, I think you all know Rick. Rick runs Bay Area Amusements and has for quite a number of years. You probably, very few of you know me. I'm a collector. I've been collecting pinballs for 20 years or so. And by training, I'm an electrical engineer. By profession, I'm a software developer. And I run a small software company called Reprise Software, as well as a musical instrument manufacturer known as Muse Research. I'm also a rancher, and some of you may have heard rumors of Steve Ritchie living on a ranch in California. That's my ranch, and you can read whatever you want to into that. Rick and I formed PPS, or Planetary Pinball Supply, to manufacture and distribute parts for Williams and Bally and whatever else. So I'll go into sort of the IP primer, and then I'll let Rick expand on that a little bit. I want to start by saying I'm not an attorney, so whatever I say here, you can believe it or not believe it, and if you really want to understand it, you should consult your attorney. Intellectual property basically is property that's non-tangible. So as an example, if you have a playfield, that's a tangible thing. That's not intellectual property, but it contains intellectual property, such as the trademarks on the playfield, the copyrights of the design, etc. There's essentially four ways you can protect intellectual property. You can trademark it. You can put a copyright on it. You can patent some part of the design or the functioning of it. Or you can hold it as trade secret, in which case you just don't tell anyone about it, which is kind of hard to do with most parts of a pinball machine. What we did is when we acquired the rights from Wayne, we acquired the rights to, we acquired a license to reproduce Williams parts. So Williams is still the license holder. Williams owns the copyrights. Williams owns the trademarks. A lot of people say you acquired Williams. Well, that's not really true. We don't own any part of Williams. We are licensed by Williams to recreate some of these parts and to create games, should we choose to, under the Bally logo. And I think I'll turn it over to Rick now, let him continue.
Okay, so hi, everybody. So kind of what we're going to do and what we want to do is from a parts perspective is, you know, we want to do get parts more into the market faster. So more parts into the market faster. There's ways to do that. There's things that can be done in terms of just accelerating through a number of suppliers. So we're very enthusiastic about working with suppliers that may make a few parts or whatnot and trying to figure out a way to get them into the market faster. I think trying to use some, you know, new approaches and technology to do that. Part of what happens in pinball is traditional suppliers are very reluctant to run 200 parts at anything near a cost, you know, productive model. So, you know, we try to look for ways to get that to happen. And there's different ways to, you know, do artwork and to do hard parts and tooling and things like that that I think we have some experience with. You know, so it's really trying to get more parts in the market faster. You know, the velocity, and one of the things when you move from Australia to the U.S., you get a few weeks of a container not sitting on a ship with all the parts that were manufactured in Chicago, and I think we can kind of help with that by, you know, California is a couple days away, and then we can redistribute that all through the world. So I think we get a little bit of benefit there, just really tactically, and then just trying to move more through the system by not necessarily doing everything ourselves. I think we're going to do some things, but we're going to really use a lot of people that really do good work and really want to work with us to do that. So, you know, that's kind of one objective or the key objective. And then, you know, the other part is to help build the community. If we don't have a community, we won't sell parts. We won't have pinballs. We won't do anything. So, you know, there's a community that currently exists, all of you and all of the people around the world. But there's also a community that doesn't exist yet that really doesn't know about this. So to the degree that we can, you know, help with any of that, you know, we'll take that on in terms of helping support, you know, shows or clubs or whatnot that we can go do. Can't do everything, but you know, I think we feel pretty strongly if the community dies, if this art dies, and you know, and the whole thing, you know, gets harder to do, then the community will suffer, and we won't kind of have the opportunity to support them or supply to them. So, you know, we're going to take things like we have now the domain names pinball.com, pin2000.com, and pinball2000.com. But what we're going to do is really try to put some more content on there, you know, in terms of educational or, you know, manuals, which are already on IPDB, but parts manuals and things like that, that we're going to put on in an open way. No, you know, we're not charging on the web for stuff. And then make that available, try to get more content that's usable, you know, to help people restore their games and things like that. We're going to look at, you know, how we can do things in terms of exhibits. We work on the West Coast with the Pacific Pinball Expo in the museum there, and we're talking to them about what can we do in terms of new exhibits and just helping, you know, kind of the Americana part of pinball. So we'll try to do a little bit of there, and then, you know, just as I said earlier, sponsoring clubs and, you know, we've already talked to a couple about doing that. You know, and I think the last topic is really, you know, explore how we can help, you know, continue to bring games into the market. So as Matt said, we have, as part of our license from Williams, the right to manufacture games with a Bally logo on it. And so, you know, that doesn't mean we will. It just means we got to look at, you know, what it takes to do that in a way that, you know, makes sense. And so, you know, that can be anywhere from games, kits, or nothing, you know, and so I think we're going to take a look at that because we can and we have some license to do so. And obviously, you know, everything that requires a license from Williams requires their approval to do it. So every part that has any intellectual property in it goes through Williams, and they're the authority. They're the ones that say yes or no. You know, and if we do things right, they'll usually say yes more than they'll say no. So that's kind of really the nut, you know, of the overview of what we'll do. And we're going to keep this really short up front because we want to answer questions for the bulk of the hour because it's much more interesting to us to do that. And then, you know, around some specifics, which we'll probably get into some of the questions. But, you know, right now we've already we've only been live really the last week. We did the deal on the 11th of October, and then we went through the week trying to announce it and get the website up and running and all the classic things that you have to do. But, you know, we're already in the process. We've talked to a number of suppliers, and part of it is either bringing more people on board. So we brought for example, I heard at the PPE show the need to have some EM back glasses for Williams Bally. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of that stuff going on. So we've talked to a supplier who's going to come online and do, you know, whatever their number of titles is to make some EM, you know, reproduction back glasses, much like they do a lot for Gottlieb and things like that. And that was about a 5 or 10 minute conversation. It's not rocket science. We're not making back glasses, you know, ourselves. And why not, you know, let the people that do that for a living, you know, do the Williams Bally ones. We've talked to a number of vendors that are currently supplying parts that we're trying to get them to accelerate. So, you know, how can we get more play fields, plastics, you know, decals, molded parts, common parts, you know, and that's what we've been out here really talking to people about. And then, you know, how can we get additional artwork? We've just done a couple of new parts, like the No Good Gophers. Gophers are out in the next few days. You know, thanks to somebody, I forget who, that supplied them to me through RGP. And, you know, they let us have those. And then we, you know, finally have made the replacements for those and had them decorated. Roadshow eyeballs are just coming out. Those types of things are just, you know, a steady stream that we want to really kind of put out in the market. And so, you know, and another one that's a hot topic is EPROMs for LEDs. So we've been working on those, and in the next couple of weeks, they'll be released and available through, you know, via a chip. So it's not a download thing. through the site at a really reasonable price, not a high price. It's we know how much the chips are, and just to program them and get them out the door. And so that'll help people that have LEDs kind of get rid of all the ghosting issues and the blinking and stuff like that, and include some patches and modifications to the code that are needed to do that, above and beyond what's been out there, and under William's approval and some of the constraints that they want us to do that make a lot of sense. So those are just some examples. And then, again, what we're looking for is anybody that wants to do things or has things to do or has some capability or some assets, some equipment, whatever, come to us and see what we can do, and hopefully we can work something out. So really that is what we wanted to cover without, getting a lot of dialogue. And then what we're going to do is go to the next phase of our program.
Right. We're going to have a giveaway, and we're going to invite our guest MC, Sam Harvey, up here to run the giveaway. We've got some of these lovely Planetary Pinball T-shirts, as well as a few Wizard Block posters. So, Sam?
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, everybody. Any first-time attendees? Very good. We're heading in the right direction. So they asked me to come up with some trivia questions, and Gary Flower gave them a few questions, and I gave them a few, and hopefully we'll have a little fun with it. I guess, what's the best way? Do you want to just have the people stand up if they know the answer, and you can look out that way? And okay, whatever. Okay, the first question is going to be, what was the first game with a dot matrix?
Checkpoint.
Checkpoint is correct. Well, no, not me. You see better than I do. Come on.
Well, hang on.
Need spotters like an
entrepreneur. Let's do it by raise of hand. But I think Martin was the first one.
Okay.
So Martin, would you like a T-shirt or a poster?
A T-shirt, please.
Okay. Large or extra large? I'm sorry. Extra large. Okay.
We tried to mix up a few with the older questions, trivia, and newer ones also. Who knows what the, since you toured the Stern plant today, who knows the address of the Stern plant?
2020.
All right, hang on, don't shout them out. Let us pick someone. Hands?
Dennis.
Over here on the side.
2020 Dennis and Lower Park.
That is correct.
Correct.
For those of you who might have been at the first Pinball Expo in 85, who was the banquet speaker at the first Pinball Expo? That is correct. There's a feature on pinball machines that have been on for quite a long time, and that's return lanes back to the flippers, where the ball goes through the return lane back to the flippers. This is a two-part question, so it's two questions, actually. What was the first Gottlieb game that was designed to have this feature? And the second part of it is, what was the first Gottlieb game that actually was the first game with this feature? Because it's two different answers.
So first part, the first one designed.
The first one. It might be a little bit too obscure.
Sam, you stumped the audience.
I win the T-shirt of the or whatever. Yeah.
The second part
is the answer to the first one was Paradise, and the first game with return lanes to the flippers.
Anyone know the answer to the second part?
That is correct.
Ah, right.
The reason why they did it on Bankable, because they all the constituents conveyed, and they figured that would be a better game to release, even though it was going to be a later game. So they did it with Bankable. Oh, the answer to the first one was Paradise, 1965 game. And the answer to the first one that actually had the feature first was Bankable, because they released Bankable before they released Paradise, even though it was designed to come out on Paradise. Who knows what the first game with a match is for Gottlieb?
Hands?
57 Royal Flush.
That is correct. The first game was Royal Flush, 1957. And with any manufacturer, which was the first manufacturer, and what is the name of the game that had a pop bumper? Should I tell the answer? The answer to this was Saratoga, William Saratoga in 48.
You said that.
Who said somebody? He said somebody said it. I didn't hear it.
I didn't see a hand. I don't see a hand. There's no answer.
These pinball people are honest. We'll trust them. You know. Okay. Who knows why Attaballs were invented? Some places have Attaballs and some places had replay games. Who knows why Attaballs were invented?
Pick one, Sam.
Oh, hang on. In the back, in the red.
Because of the legal ramifications, it was considered gambling at the time.
That is correct. Some of the places that didn't allow replay games, it was against the law in their municipality to win a free game on a pinball machine. And to skirt that issue, they came up with Attaballs, where they just extended the game for the life of the game for so many balls instead of winning actually a replay. And they figured, why should they be deprived of revenue in those companies? So it's pretty ingenious and pretty landmark item to invent. Who knows what the first solid-state game, and I didn't know the answer to this for a while, where I thought it was, the first solid-state game.
The guy in the blue in the third row here.
Gorgar. No, that was the first game with speech.
The orange cap in the back, in the middle right there. Yep.
No, ooh. Way, little bit before that.
What do you say?
The flipper.
No.
Okay, the blue...
Here goes Spirit of 76.
That's what I thought was the answer, too, but it's not. There was for many years, I thought that was the answer.
Blue, sir, right here.
Scrap Valley Freedom.
Nope.
Okay, the guy crossing his arms like this.
Allied Leisure, Dynamite.
That is correct. That was news to me, too, later on. Very good. Darn it, I didn't stuff it. Son of a... For a while we did. I should have known, my buddy Tom. Tom is another one like myself, and as well as David Marston and some others, that have been to all 26 expos. So part of our family that we see once a year. We have one more, correct?
Two more.
Oh, okay, we skipped one, so I'll have to come up with another one then.
Okay.
What is the reason the card? Why is the difference between the card trays where the scorecards go on the Italian Attaball games is different than the Attaball games and the card trays on the Americans? There's a certain writing on the card tray that's different than the ones in the United States.
The hat in the back.
You. Yes, that is correct. On the Italian Attaballs, it said on their buttons on side of cabinet instead of flipper buttons on side of cabinet, because some kind of vernacular it was deemed something risque or something by using the word flipper.
One more.
Here's one that I don't. This might stump them. Okay. There is a. Well, of course, there could be more there. What is the last, the smallest production game that Bally had? Right toward the end of the electromechanical era.
No,
I'm sorry. What was the answer?
I don't know. Double up. Blue in the back.
Double up.
That of the big time numbers, yes, that's correct. They made 55, but there's one. I'll sort of give you a hint. There's one they made one of, and it was an electromechanical version of Supersonic.
SST. Star Trip
is correct. Star Trip. That was Mike Pasak has the playfield, has NOS playfield. I think Star Trip is correct. They only made one of them.
Okay, come get your shirt anyways.
Heard. That's what I've heard. The Bally guy would know that. Argue with Brian. He knows. He knows the answer to that. Is that correct?
That's
Starship. Okay, Starship. Okay, I couldn't hear you, Jay. I'm sorry. Starship is correct.
Okay. And we're done.
And we're done. Thank you. Hope everybody had fun.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Sam, you missed one part.
Matt wants me to tell everyone a clean, funny joke. Kids are in school. This will be especially funny if you happen to be a teacher. Kids are in school, and the teacher's teaching second grade, and she asks the class, she says, if anybody in the class feels like they're stupid, please stand up. Nobody stands up. Pretty soon, little Johnny stands up. And the teacher says, Johnny, he says, do you think you're stupid? He says, not really. He says, I just felt sorry for you standing up there all by yourself.
Thank you, Sam.
All right. Now we'll get to any questions. So there's no holds barred questions. Why don't we just start from the front of the room and go backwards. Go ahead.
There's another game I hear of only having one made. When I played it in the best arcades, it was in Whitewood, Playfield. Just wondering if anybody else can confirm that.
A Whitewood Playfield for what?
It's called Mysterii.
Mysterii? Don't know. Next question. Go ahead.
The parts rights here.
Right.
Does that include Williams license games too?
So the question is, the parts rights we have the rights to, does it include Bally Williams games also?
Yes.
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 The license games, of course, we have to get the license from the third-party rights owner as well. I did repeat the question. The question was the rights that we have, are they to Bally Williams games? That was the question. Sorry. Yes. So the question is, Wayne is completely out of making parts and machines. Rick?
Well, Wayne is not completely out of making parts and machines. Wayne will continue on with the medieval project, Medieval Madness project, and in the course of doing that, he will... working with us, who we work through Williams, you know, will help make sure any parts that we can, you know, support him in getting for the game get made. But above and beyond that, you know, he is not allowed or permitted to make any Williams, you know, proprietary, you know, artwork or anything like that without express permission from us as a supplier or things like that. Obviously, you know, common parts are fair game for anybody to make, you know, that don't have any intellectual property from Williams. This does not cover all pinball parts. It covers, you know, proprietary parts.
Yes, back here. So the question is, are there any plans to do new code for games, such as Theater of Magic, so that it doesn't suck?
So... that one is I don't know what the plans would be because, you know, it's expensive and time-consuming to do game ROMs, find the code, recompile, you know, retest, you know, all that.
Given you the building blocks of your code.
Well, I think we have access to Williams intellectual property, and there's lots of ways to get modifications done to code. I think the question is, I think it's a case-by-case basis. Clearly, you know, doing LED test ROMs or LED ROMs to improve a game for the new technology is kind of a easy one to kind of ask Williams for permission. They say yes. It was done in the later year games. So we're really applying that concept back to earlier games. In terms of modifying the fundamental structure of a gameplay, I think that's probably where, you know, that would test some of the boundaries of what you want to do because, you know, after all, it is a Williams Bally branded game and there's still some protection of that. But I think it's really a case-by-case basis of what makes sense. Obviously, home ROM games have been done. There are some variations out there that I don't even know the origins of. So, you know, I think it's one of those practical things, like if we've got something that makes sense and we can show that it's constructive for things, then we will run it by Williams, and Williams will give an opinion, you know, and their opinion is kind of the answer. So that's what we do.
Yeah, I wanted to add on to that. Of course, any modification like that would require Williams' approval. And one person's doesn't suck is another person sucks terribly. So who knows? We could do a lot of work to make a game, and Williams might decide, you ruined our game. So the question is, are we going to remake any of the old Williams or Bally titles?
So, don't know. I think as we said, we're trying to look into what it takes to make a game. You know, there's been a couple of examples that have taken a lot longer to make a game than people otherwise would have wanted. And, you know, I think, you know, the main objective is, can we keep games coming into the market? You know, obviously Stern has the infrastructure to do all that, and we definitely want games to continue in the market. You know, is there better ways to help, you know, with games coming into the market? I think, you know, it takes a village to build a pinball game. I mean, it's a lot of people, a lot of talent, the artists, the designers, and things like that. So, you know, to remake a game is really difficult as well, just to find and source all the parts. So the answer is, it could be. It's just kind of, does it make sense to do a remake of an older game, and can you really get the price points, you know, and the interest to do that? I mean, you know, a remake for a volume of 200 is going to cost a heck of a lot more, you know, these days, and that tends to be one of the limiting factors, is how much does it cost with a bill of materials to do? And, you know, people are looking at kits. You know, maybe there's some kit-type things that can be done, because then you avoid the whole, you know, surrounding cabinet and board sets and things like that. You know, so we're looking into it, but it's probably too early to say whether it can or can't be done. And again, it's going to go through Williams, and they're going to say yes or no, you know, based on the merits of doing the project.
And of course, our initial focus is going to be on getting more parts out to the market.
Right.
So we're going to really stay focused on that for a while.
How about the orange in the back?
You guys get a lot of the Gene Cunningham?
We do. I mean, I was down in DeGene's for a week doing Big Bang Bar with him, with Carrie, and just helping do some things down there. I've known Gene and Kim for, I don't know, years, and we have a good relationship. I've been a distributor of Illinois Pinball since I started doing what I was doing, and don't see any reason that needs to change. I think, you know, we're going to focus on what we do and what we need to get into the market. They're going to focus on what we do. We're already talking about joint projects that we can kind of leverage what each of us do to kind of get some more things out faster. Okay. Well,
so the question is, let me see if I can rephrase the question. Do we have any concerns about parts such that if they were going to Gene or someone else to put into another game, could we do that? Is that
parts
for manufacture for other games? Rick?
Well, so, and let me. This is now time to probably caveat the fact that we have Roger Sharp in the room, who's our Williams interface, and so he can stand us corrected on any topic. But as far as I can tell, that there is no, you know, there's nothing in terms of our authority to prevent somebody from purchasing. I don't know, if they want to purchase 100 Theater Magic Translites, they can go purchase 100. You know, I think it's more. So what their ability is to, you know, leverage that into a game and so forth, you know, in terms of the Williams permission set and things like that. Yeah. Okay.
And the checkered shirt back here.
Do you have access to any of the tooling that existed for any of these original parts, or do you have to recreate everything from scratch?
Well, we have access to a lot of things. We have access to tooling that exists in various forms. A lot of parts were tooled on the fly, you know, so a lot of, you know, brackets and things like that are not tools, but a process of what, you know, what standard tools you need to do to put together to make something. And there's ways to accelerate. We've got a company that makes tools who owns the tooling shop. So then any of that stuff we can find and do. Quite frankly, I don't have an issue with tooling being available or not being available. I think there's very few parts that we can't make one way or the other. It's typically, does it make sense to make them? Is there a market to make them? And can we do it? So, you know, between tooling of parts, artwork, ability to recreate artwork, I mean, you know, look at what Classic Playfields does. I mean, they're astounding in terms of just doing this open source model of artists and kind of collecting that into a vehicle to go recreate some good artwork that makes it you know, easier to have your game look nice. So the answer is we have tooling, We've made tooling, we continue to make tooling, and we leverage whatever we can. Anything else? Dr. Yes. Scott.
What are your priorities in making parts? You seem to be talking very generally.
Question is, what are our priorities in making parts?
Priorities of making parts are the parts that people need to have made. Typically when, in my other company, I typically ask the customers what they want, and they typically tell me, and if I detect patterns, then I go make the part. And it's all, got to be customer driven, which is not the loudest person on the news group says I need something that's been tried and failed many times where you make something because the loudest person talks and nobody comes to the table. So I think what we want to do is really open the door to everybody that says, make this. I think we have a good idea. We've been doing this for a long time to figure out what is needed. Artwork, custom game parts that are typically deteriorated or damaged. Obviously common parts, which many manufacturers make, and we will only do the things that are missing. And then any of the game-specific brackets and things like that that make the game work. It's kind of the Maslow's hierarchy of what does it take to convert a game that is sitting and idle and not worth anything to having that person want to restore the game and make it work first and then make it look good second. So, I think that's really what we're here to try to do. Dan?
Sort of feeding off what you just said, an area I have concern is the earlier electromechanical games where, you have artists like Terry Kelly and, the back of us has shot the games and still today is a dumpster parted out at best.
Right.
And, to me, this is getting, very difficult, but I recognize that the volume of sales that might be available for, repro backlasses from that era when, Valley did a very poor job generally manufacturing glasses, may not be sufficient. So a suggestion and a comment. If you had, since with the PPE tie-in, you have good images, many of the glasses, if you could get the image files in, and then consider how those images could be exploited in different ways, so that one way might be even a plexi, interim piece and shirt or whatever. Yeah. It's kind of a plea to make it so that when those games show up, so that they could be
So I agree. I think the most, getting the artwork, off of scans and things like that. We've already talked to Mike Pasak. He's got a volume of opportunity with all the Bally games on Earth and things like that. So we've already had that discussion with him, and then we will, as you said, figure out how to target that. And the first thing we did is we talked to the Webs about doing some glasses, and they're doing 4 to 6 the first year, and that's already done. And they're picking the titles. I don't pick the titles, and then obviously we take that through Williams and should go fine. Their reputation is well known and move forward. So,
And just a sort of quick follow-up, maybe a suggestion might be that, that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, to see games avoid the dumpster the next 20 years, for the rest of the titles, maybe something could be done that maybe Williams could license. It's not a real glass, but it's something that at least will stand in and avoid.
So we'll talk about that. The other thing that is obvious but has been a topic in the last few months is cabinet stencils.
Yeah.
So I'm a firm believer that cabinet stencils should be done. I think first conversation we had with Gene on Friday, I think, was to get an agreement that we would both, request the ability to do that with Williams, and we're going to go do that, and we're going to go request and then try to get the pipeline of stencils back, going again. So, again, it's kind of what are the obvious things that you need to unblock to make a game? James at Pinball Inc., was always, if people don't have ramps, that's a really hard thing to patch together to make a game work. It's kind of like that, is what do you need to make the game functional first and then beautiful second?
So I'll say as a purely selfish add-on, I'm a big EM collector. And I also hate to see games go in the dumpster. So you can imagine that we're probably going to address that.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, that's it as far as the Williams license for a temporary solution versus permanent.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're on it. What else? Anything else? Go ahead.
What's your involvement in Wizard Blocks, and is there a completion date?
So the question is, what's our involvement in Wizard Blocks, and is there a completion date?
Go ahead, you take it. I'm taking it.
Okay, Rick's going to let me take that. Well, we own the copyrights and trademark Wizard Blocks. Is there a completion date? I don't know of a completion date. I'm not going to stand here and say Wizard Blocks is going to be done, you know, February 23rd, 2012. We know that Gene is talking about making Wizard Blocks. We're happy to help him with that if that's something we can do. I'm not sure that we want to take that on as a project, but I think that's really all we can say at this point. There's no completion date. We can say that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's a reasonably incomplete game, and it's non-trivial, you know, to complete a game. You know, it can be done, but it takes a lot of work to do it. So, you know, it's, you know, first time we had the discussion around Wizard Blocks, it's fine. You know, we're happy to help, you know, leverage what we have to get, you know, a project like that done, you know, and Gene has, you know, things that he has. He has the you know, the prototype and things like that. We both own patents and Pinball 2000, things like that. But, you know, we just haven't sat around the table and figured out, you know, how we could go get something like that done.
It's a big software job at this point. Yeah. Wizard Blocks was very incomplete. Okay,
great.
Well, then I guess you should ask Gene what the schedule is for Wizard Blocks.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Are you guys open to the original game designers trying to reprise or modify the game if they can?
Don't know. I mean, I don't know what that means. So
the question is, are we open to the original game designers coming back to us to reprise a game?
Okay.
Well, we would certainly not say no. What we would do, of course, first is we would go ask Williams, is this something you would entertain before anyone put a lot of effort into it? But, you know, I see no reason why
we would
say no.
There's no reason to say no as the first thing that you do. I think the first thing to do is figure out what it is and whether it makes sense to do in terms of it can be feasibly done, and then obviously then Williams has to agree to it. You know, at the end of the day, Williams has a brand. You know, these games carry a brand. You know, you can't go change the language and everything on a Williams game. It can really upset the perception of that brand. And so that's why they're involved. They own the rights, and we do that. But frankly, I don't, you know, the more we can help to make available the right way, the more we will make available the right way. You know, and it obviously can't be a huge time sink in terms of just, you know, spending years on something. We want to try to leverage that through other people. So we're happy to have other people that have abilities to come to us and figure out something we can do.
Yeah, I think in general, we have absolutely no philosophical objection to anything like that. Anything that brings more games to the market, anything that allows games that exist to work better, to play better, to look better, are things that we're in favor of.
Anything else?
You mentioned the prioritization already. Do you look at the ability to request you know, we could go in and say, I'd like some source for local games.
Yeah. The first thing I put on, you know, and very fledgling on pinball.com, Planetary Pinball site, is a contact thing. We're putting in a kind of a form to fill out what you need that's a little bit more specific, you know, game, part, and then that'll help us kind of keep tally of, you know, what's going on. We may do polls or questions or something on the site to figure that out. But yeah, we want to do something where the voice of the customer comes in and helps us, you know, and every time somebody fills out, I want this or that, I put it on a list. You know, and then if I know how to make pop bumper caps and there's a bunch of those on the list, then we typically start skewing to the ones that people want us to do. You know, we're doing, for example, all the pop bumper caps, the hot stamping, the pad printing, all that kind of stuff. So any of those things that are under Williams Bally rights are going to be done soon. Targets as well, stamp targets, hot stamp targets, all that kind of stuff. You know, so all that kind of stuff. And obviously there's a million things to do. It's just trying to see what we can do, start those first, and then make the variations. And we're always looking at new areas to go start, you know, producing. Anything else? Go ahead.
As far as existing parts inventory, it seems for Williams Valley, Gene has some, Pinbowling has some, you've got some. Can you talk a little bit about that? Yeah, like what percentage?
Well, I don't know what other people have. I know I got more parts than I want to have sometimes. I think what, you know, if I take my other hat for Bay Area Amusements, what I think is important is I don't care about the 10 million parts. I care about the 1,000 or 100 that the customer needs that's going to be useful to get what they need to get done. So I tend to philosophically just focus on what are the parts that people need to get done what they need to get done, and that's what's important to me, you know, not how many I have, because I'll tell you, there's about a 10 million brackets that nobody's ever going to use in their lifetime, and I don't really need to have those filling up a warehouse. So it's not important to me, you know, I don't need to have a lot of parts that I'm never going to use. It's just not what I do. So, you know, I think we have a lot of parts. We got a lot more parts from the deal that we did, and we're making parts all the time. We just have been running around. We've dug up a whole bunch of parts just in our travels in the last day or two that haven't been made, that can be made, that will be made, and that's what we're doing. You know, just prospecting to go find stuff that we can go do. Anything else?
Are there any parts of the planetary plan to make that only Bay Area wouldn't have in stock and other
No.
areas would not have?
No.
So the question is, that are there any parts that Planetary would make that only Bay Area Amusements will have in stock?
Sorry. No. Planetary Pinball is a manufacturing distribution company. So manufacturing distribution companies, their DNA is to go manufacture and distribute. So distribution is through all the channels. So all the distributors that we inherited, I've talked to all of them. They're all excited and they're all ready to do things to put the parts into their customers' hands. So nothing changes, and the behavior is got to be kind of a neutral stance for that. Go ahead.
Yes.
So does that mean that Wine's going to be the sole distributor in Australia?
Question is, does that mean Wayne's going to be a distributor in Australia?
So what it means is Wayne is the current distributor that we've, you know, selected in Australia. Typically a distributor is a function of, you know, whether a distributor remains a distributor and whether there's more distributors is a function of how much business they do relative to what we think they should be doing. So, you know, if we've got, you know, a distributor that doesn't seem to be moving as much as what the market, you know, could move, then we expand. So that's kind of where we are.
So that means anyone in Australia has to physically buy from Wine?
Well, they can buy from anywhere, any of the distributors, if they want those parts. Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. Is that can somebody else in Australia, say, for instance, people's spare parts, also buy from you guys and sell within Australia?
They do. They have. You know. Yeah. So, I mean, parts is parts, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of... It's, you know, you respect the distributor because they're making an investment to go carry your parts, inventory your parts, order your parts, and have some margin to run a business, you know, but they have to perform, you know, and for, you know, the most part, all the distributors that I'm aware of do, and when they don't, then you have to, you know, help the customer and get the parts into their hands.
Yes.
Are you guys going to make cabinet art decals? Is that something that's going to be in Wayne's hands with his new technology and his printers that he's invested in, or is that property that you guys have acquired?
So the question is, are we going to make cabinet art and decals, or is Wayne going to continue to do that? So the technology that Wayne has, we have now. So and we will be making cabinet art and decals and translates. Yes. That's online now, and we're making those parts now.
Any hard questions? Go ahead.
Hard question.
Can you just clarify, did you purchase all the rights, licenses, and patents that Wayne had from Williams? or does he still retain any?
So the question is, did we purchase all the rights, licenses, and patents that Wayne had from Williams, or does he retain any? Is that that?
Yes. That was easy. Any hard questions? Yeah.
Yes.
There's I think we're all aware there's some black and gray market areas out there that are selling.
Just a few, yeah.
Property. Are we going to see you guys maybe embrace some of that and bring them out of that market and into legitimate mainstream? Or is it going to be kind of blackballed because one black, all the black?
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the logic of we're trying to supply parts to you guys. I don't know why we have to spend a lot of time police forcing, you know, things. But the other thing is we're not the police force. You know, we're a licensee. Our job is to go make parts. Our job is not to police the intellectual property violations. We can and probably will do some of it, but it falls really back on, you know, Williams is really supplying the license, and they ultimately are, you know, looking after that intellectual property because it's theirs. It's not ours. Now, obviously, we're in the day-to-day, and we see things, and, you know, it may not be productive to go wait a week to have, you know, a zillion copies of some cabinet art sold on eBay that are crap, and then we, you know, Williams is busy. They have their day jobs, you know, and we may or may not find a way to, you know, to take care of that stuff when it happens. More importantly, I think we want to ask people that have some of that stuff to come to us and figure out if we can either, you know, they can supply it through us to the market or, you know, possibly even sell it themselves. But it's not going to happen without, you know, kind of us being aware, knowledgeable, approved, so on and so forth. I mean, you know, there's lots of really bad artwork out there, really bad, you know, where people have bought these cabinet decals and then they wash it. Once it's on their game, then they wash it to clean it and the ink just comes right off. So we don't want that stuff going on. I'd prefer to spend 100% of my time making parts than police forcing anybody to go do that. It's you know, so come to us if there's stuff. And I've done this in Bay Area Amusements. People call me up all the time and say, I got this thing, you know, and can I do it? And the answer is usually yes. I don't understand why the answer should be no first. The answer is usually yes. Let's figure out a way to do it, get it approved, and get it out.
Yes.
Hard one.
Hard question is it Planetary Pinball is owned by YouTube, or is there other people who are your sound partners, or is it just sold to a big sound?
So the question is Planetary Pinball owned by us two, or are there other silent partners?
Last time I checked, it was owned by us two, yeah. Us two. The two of us.
Yes.
Why did Wayne give up his license or sell his license?
So the question is, why did Wayne sell his license?
The appropriate answer is that's a question for Wayne. You know, I can tell you that Wayne's been doing this a long time, 5 years. I think it's almost the anniversary, 5 years. For doing that. It seems like the five-year mark seems to be, you know, Wayne got the license 5 years after Gene got the license, and now we've got the license 5 years after Wayne got the license. Maybe there's a timer that just goes off after 5 years. I don't know. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you very much.
So thanks a lot. And just we'll be at the 10 o'clock Dave Marston internet thing. So if anybody has any questions that you didn't get through or think about,
and we're going to be around all weekend as well.
Yeah, so just stop by. Thanks.